There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I want to know if there was a moment where you realized the effect that pure consciousness had on your work.
Right from the very beginning, the enjoyment of the doing, the enjoyment of life, grows. Tonight's talk is consciousness, creativity, and the brain. And if you have a golf ball-sized consciousness, when you read a book, you'll have a golf ball-sized understanding. When you look out, a golf ball size awareness, and when you wake up in the morning, a golf ball size wakefulness. But if you could expand that consciousness, then you read the book, more understanding. You look out, more awareness, and when you wake up, more wakefulness. It's consciousness. And there's an ocean of pure, vibrant consciousness inside each one of us. And it's right at the source and base of mind, right at the source of thought, and it's also at the source of all matter. And Maharishi Mahesh Yogi teaches a technique called transcendental meditation. It's a simple, easy, effortless technique, yet supremely profound, that allows any human being to dive within, experiencing subtler levels of mind and intellect, and transcend and experience this ocean of pure consciousness. This pure consciousness is called by modern physics the unified field. It's at the base of all mind and all matter. Modern science says all of matter, everything that is a thing, emerges from this field. And this field has qualities like bliss, intelligence, creativity, universal love, energy, peace. And it's not the intellectual understanding of this field, but the experiencing of it that does everything. You dive within and transcending, experiencing this field of pure consciousness, and you enliven it, you unfold it, it grows. The final outcome of this growth of consciousness is called enlightenment. And enlightenment is the full potential of all of us human beings. And a side effect of enlivening this consciousness is negativity starts to recede. When I started meditating, I was filled with anxieties, filled with fears, kind of a depression and anger. And I took this anger out on my first wife. And after 2 weeks of meditation, she comes to me and she says, "What's going on?" And I was quiet for a moment because it could have been any number of things she might have been referring to. I finally said, "What do you mean?" And she said, "This anger, where did it go?" And I didn't even realize it had lifted. Now, these negative things like anger and depression and sorrow, they're beautiful things in a story, but they're like a poison to the filmmaker. They're a poison to the painter. They're poison to creativity. They're like a vice grip. If you are super depressed, you can't hardly get out of bed, let alone think ideas, have that creativity flowing. So it's money in the bank to get that beautiful consciousness growing, which is flowing creativity, The ability to catch ideas at a deeper level, intuition grows. This field is a field of pure knowingness. You dive in there, you sort of just know how to go. You know how to solve solutions. It's like an ocean of solutions. And you can just feel this thing growing. But the ultimate thing for me is the enjoyment of the doing, the enjoyment of life grows. I love making films now more than ever before. Ideas flow more. Everybody has more fun on the set. Creativity flows. There's no, people look like friends and not like enemies. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing, and it's us. In Vedic science, this field of pure consciousness is called Atma, the self of us all. That level of life, we are all one. We're one. Diversity up here, unity down below.
You experience this field when you really get there and transcend. It gets to the point where you couldn't hurt another human being. It would be like hurting yourself. And you travel in real peace. You travel and you meet friends, not enemies.
I think I had so many anxieties and fears, and I felt those lifting. And bliss is a thing in this field, the unified field. Bliss, they say, is the sweetest nectar of life. Bliss is physical, emotional, mental, spiritual happiness. And you can vibrate with this bliss. And it's this happiness from within. They have a saying, true happiness isn't out there. True happiness lies within. And I always wondered, where is this within? And they don't say where it is. And then they don't even say how to get to it. This is the beauty of this technique. There's lots of forms of meditation. But with transcendental meditation, to me, the key is the word transcend, to dive all the way in. It's a huge realm between the surface of life and this fundamental pure consciousness, but it's there. And when you're in it, you know you're in it. It's familiar, but it's you. And right away, a happiness, but it's not like a goofball happiness. It's a thick beauty. It's a thick beauty to appreciate life and living. And why suffer? Suffering starts to go. And people say, well, you gotta have anger, you gotta have an edge, you know, to create. You gotta know about anger. You gotta have energy, you gotta have clarity to create. You gotta be able to catch ideas. You gotta be able to be strong enough to fight unbelievable pressure and stress and the whole thing in this world.
Stress. Anxiety, depression, anger, hate, fear.
That will lift because this whole thing is tied to world peace. It's going to be a better world, but it's still a very tough world. And this just gives you more and more and more ability to say, it just looks beautiful. It's way, 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 way better. And this happened right away.
In tonight's Health Edge, the growing trend of cyberbullying.
5,000 school employees walked out to demand increased education funding.
It ultimately, could every kid just get their education through a screen?
The more we are taught to list and resent the things of which we were deprived as children, the more we live in that anger and frustration, and the more we remain children. This is the kind of paradox, I think, of what it is to be a halfway intelligent American right now, and probably also a Western European, is that there are things we know are right and good and would be better for us to do, but constantly it's like, yeah, but, you know, it's so much funnier and nicer to go do something else, and who cares, and it's all bullshit anyway. And for me personally, I don't know that it's really ever been all that different. I think probably American education used to be a little bit better and a little bit more difficult, and children had no choice but to realize that there were certain things that were hard and involved a certain amount of drudgery that were actually very satisfying at the end of it. But for the most part, I think in the U.S., people who've been doing, quote, serious stuff, which is harder and stranger, have always played to a much smaller audience. There's a difference, though, I think, between being mildly bored, but then there's another kind of boredom that I think you're talking about, which is reading requires sitting alone by yourself in a quiet room. And I have friends, intelligent friends, who don't like to read because they get, it's not just bored, there's an almost dread that comes up, I think, about having to be alone and having to be quiet. And you see that when you walk into most public spaces in America, it isn't quiet anymore. They pipe music through. And the music's easy to make fun of because it's usually really horrible music, but it seems significant that we don't want things to be quiet ever anymore. And to me, I don't know that I could defend it, but that seems to me to have something to do with when you feel like the purpose of your life is to gratify yourself and get things for yourself and go all the time, there's this other part of you that's the same part that can kind of is almost hungry for silence and quiet and thinking really hard about the same thing for maybe half an hour instead of 30 seconds that doesn't get fed at all. And it makes itself felt in the body in a kind of dread in here. I don't know whether that makes a whole lot of sense, but I think it's true that here in the U.S., every year the culture gets more and more hostile. I don't mean hostile like angry, just it becomes more and more difficult to ask people to read or to look at a piece of art for an hour or to listen to a piece of music that's complicated and that takes work to understand because, well, there are a lot of reasons, but particularly now in computer and internet culture, everything is so fast. And the faster things go, the more we feed that part of ourselves but don't feed the part of ourselves that likes quiet, that can live in quiet, you know, that can live without any kind of stimulation. Well, particularly if you have a remote control, see, when that happens, you go to a different channel. And if you don't like that channel, you go to a different channel. One of the reasons I can't own a TV is I've started having this thing where I become convinced there's something really good on another channel and that I'm missing it. And so instead of watching, I'm scanning anxiously back and forth for this thing that I think I want that I don't even know what it is. And what it is too much good stuff combined with my sick little head that thinks there's always something a little better on the next thing. And all you have to do, you don't have to get up now to change it. That was the problem. When it became easy, you just had to move your thumb and change it. That's when we were screwed. When I was young, younger, I used to, there's a way in which we in America are comfortable, very comfortable. Some of the political and social corrections that I thought should be brought about would happen when there was some sort of cataclysm or misfortune where we weren't as comfortable anymore. The fact that we now have clear evidence that the way we live and the relationships we have with various other countries are causing some people to hate us so much that they want to kill us and may succeed in killing a great many of us frightens me only because when I was growing up, one of the mythological periods for us growing up is the Great Depression, where the story goes, everyone pulled together. There were hard times and no one had enough, but everyone pulled together and everybody. It seems to me now that the country's reaction to feeling frightened and insecure is to buy sports utility vehicles that are large and massive and tank-like and make individual people feel safer, but also get 4 miles to the gallon in a country where gasoline is probably one-fifth as expensive as it ought to be. There's a sanity in Europe about gasoline prices and fuel consumption that there isn't here yet. And yet are voting for people who are deciding to go over and very possibly kill hundreds of thousands of civilians in order to kill a few enemies. None of which is important, but the fact that no one here is talking about the connection between how we live and what we drive and the things that are happening, the speed with which it's become those bad people, those bad fanatics, they're evil. What they really hate is our freedom and our way of life, which is just hard to swallow, right? Like, who hates freedom? You know, people hate people, not freedom. I now don't know what's going to happen. And I am, as an American, as scared. Not since I was a little boy and I worried about the U.S. and the Soviet Union having an intercontinental, remember, not since that have I been this scared. And this is totally personally, but I'm more scared of us than I am of anybody else. And that's a bleak place to be. I don't think this is an evil country. I don't think American people are evil. I think we've had it very easy materially for a long time, and we've gotten very little help in understanding things that are important besides being comfortable. And I don't think anybody knows how we will react if things get really hard here. The fact that we're strong militarily and economically is a good thing, but it's also a frightening thing. The thing about it is that in America, we think of rebellion as this very sexy thing, and that it involves, you know, action and force and looks good. And my guess is the forms of rebellion that will end up changing anything meaningfully here will be very quiet and very individual, and probably not all that interesting to look at from the outside. I'm now hoping for less interesting rather than more interesting. Violence is interesting, and horrible corruption and scandals and rattling sabers and talking about war and demonizing a billion people of a different faith in the world, those are all interesting. Sitting in a chair and really thinking about what this means and why the fact that what I drive might have something to do with how people in other parts of the world feel about me isn't interesting to anybody else.
There's a line in Garp that you say you can look at the arc of your life and find it interesting. That's what it's been for me. It's nice that it has been getting better and better. That's the only thing I pull out of it. I mean, that's nice that it keeps trying. And the fact that I'm offered these amazing things to keep doing stuff that keeps exploring different aspects, that's wonderful too.
Well, the first movie was Popeye.
Yeah.
And if you remember, the opening scene is Robin in a rowboat in a storm. And I was just, here's this huge screen at Chinese Theater in Los Angeles. And I thought, that's Robin, my little boy Robin. Look at him. Eat your heart out, world. Here he comes.
Performing and doing all these things, we never acknowledge anything negative. And if you do, it gets very violent. Like the time, mm-hmm. What happens immediately after the scene you just saw is, he starts to confront who you are. So mm-hmm. I know who you are. And he would have really hurt Jeff's character if he'd gone any further. And that's why he goes, the hallucination guards against that. It's basically, it is freeing to create that character, because you can really explore kind of where you've been and the aspects of why you would want to deny, and that kind of whole mm-hmm. aspect of, you know, performing for the sake of just avoiding. For him, love is such a delicate thing that and even getting it back again triggers another one of the breakdowns. Uh-huh. It's so fragile for him, and that's what makes it interesting. That's why I did it.
There's a sadness, and then you have to go, and there's also hope. I mean, a sadness, it's always like, you wish they hadn't happened, but they did. And the purpose is to make you different. It's what they call a Buddhist gift. I would call it the ultimate Christian gift. It's that idea of you're back, and you realize the thing that matters are others, way beyond yourself. Self goes away. Ego, bye-bye.
You're not easy on yourself in this show, are you?
No. You know, as an alcoholic, I talk about, you know, some warning signs, you know, like DUIs in a cul-de-sac, things like that. The idea of, you know, have you been through it to talk about it and see, like, you know, this is what you go through. Heart surgery, you know, alcoholism. I went to rehab in wine country just to keep my options open. You know, these are things you got to talk about.
You want to talk about it?
No.
Why is there such a heavy, heavy-duty problem with drugs? That addresses the psychology of a nation. That's why I talk about it. You try and tell people you do it. Just say no. No, just say Noriega. No, beyond that. It is something much, much deeper. And yes, you're right. There is something wrong. But people are slowly waking up. The time is over for just sitting going, it'll be taken care of. And I try to address it using the only weapon I have, comedy. And that's all we do. And I hope people wake up. And they are. We ask for your help, and we'll try and help from this end. And we'll meet And there will be a kinder, gentler nation one day. Thank you.
And we all have a great need for acceptance. But you must trust that your beliefs are unique, your own, even though others may think them odd or unpopular, even though the herd may go, that's bad.
I don't envision myself as a teacher or as I can't proselytize to people, even when we talk about drugs or anything. I'm a player. And in the sense of just in the process of playing, you can talk about some interesting things, you know, that there's things that, you know, why we've evolved to, you know, to make that connection, to go on, to do amazing things, to, and that moment, talked about this once, that there is a thing when you create, when you find that little tiny flash, when you find some idea.
It's like bliss. It's bliss.
Well, because the brain gives you the same reinforcement that it does with sex. I
mean, that's right.
And the reason the brain gives you a little hit of endorphin when you create is just to keep you going.
Here's a taste.
Yes.
Keep creating, you get another taste.
Because you're only given a little spark of madness. And if you lose that, you're nothing.
Basically, when you're really firing and it really works, it's like musicians have said it, or writers say it, it's just, you're just channeling. It's truly that's why you say that divine inspiration where it just passes, you're just letting it through you.
I just wanted to ask Robin real quick about what's his favorite type of movie in terms of ones that make social impacts or ones that are fun, loving, like Aladdin, for example.
They both, I mean, I love doing both of them because I think in their own way they both have some effect. I remember people coming up after Aladdin and saying, you know, it was such a great thing that they could sit with their kid and laugh as much as their child. That, I think, is a great thing. It's like, you know, Sullivan's Travels, where you see people just having a wonderful time, especially in times like this. Well, also, why you do a movie is to learn, to expand yourself, to push yourself. It was like Peter Weir when I did Dead Poets Society. He said the power of silence, that he said, you don't have to do anything and make a point. And or the power of thought. But, you know, you learn something and you make a movie, which is a double bill.
Yeah.
And you get paid. But it's, I mean, that, if the truth is, if they knew it, I'd probably do it for much less.
I don't know how much value I have in this universe, but I do know that I made a few people happier than they would have been without me. And as long as I know that, I'm as rich as I ever need to be.
You know, some movies you do for money, and those are the dangerous ones. Old dogs, we'll talk later. The idea that you do those and you go, and you know why you're making them. It's a kid's comedy, you know it's going to be silly, and you know that's going to be up for grabs. But with something like World's Greatest Dad, it's like, no, you do it as a labor of love, and you do it with friends who you feel like you can do it with and say, hey, we're both in this together, and that's kind of wonderful. They're all done with this kind of love. You know, you commit to it, and you go, whatever happens, I'm in, I'm proud of it. That's always what I want to do, is to try different things and kind of always change perceptions.
And change the rhythm. You can.
Yeah, break up. It is a rhythm. It's basically saying, okay, now we hit it, you know, there, and then, you know, hit a little harder and then back off and then go berserk, like, you know, with the stand up, which is just free form, and then come back and play something so controlled, like in 1 hour photo. Those are all possible. And having that range really helps. For me, it's great. And but having great friends and family that just make life extraordinary and a world to still go out and see and learn about, which is the most important of all. Just look at your own life and just realize what things are precious to you. That's what I did when I was doing it. You know, I would come home and just realize how extraordinary that there is. You have heaven in front of you. That idea that you have, look around and see the precious things, the connection with family, friends, you know, the things in your, and the people, especially in your life.
My kids are extraordinary. Did they go through rough times? Yeah, but you come out the other side and I go, God, they're so amazing. I'm so blessed.
I would hope that there would be, if there was an afterlife, that would have the places that I, or at least a version of the places I've grown that I think are extraordinary here. Mountains, lakes, forests, beaches with perfect curl. But also, I mean, a place almost like Venice. Where, I mean, there's times in Venice to me, I've been there when I just go, my God, what a glorious city. And even New York in spring where you can go, there's times in every different place that you've been where you say, this is paradise, or this is extraordinary. I would hope that there'd be something like that. And most of all, I would hope you'd come in contact with extraordinary people like the ones I've met in life.
The powerful play goes on and you may contribute a verse. What will your verse be?
Think your legacy will be?
God knows. I don't know. They had a thing recently when they showed
a clip of all the HBO specials I did, and it was like going, I'm still alive, why are they doing this? I don't know what my legacy is that that I had a good time, and I think also that I've tried different things throughout my career, and I hope to keep doing that, and to keep working with interesting people.
Make your life spectacular. I know I did.
Just keep going. Find that thing you love, because it's tough work. And my father gave me this advice when I said I wanted to be an actor. He said, have a backup profession like welding. But I think if you can find that thing that really gives you joy, that'll be it. Because for me, it's always been comedy and stand-up and acting, too, because of exploring behavior. But it's tough work, and if you can get it, even better.
Realize there are a lot of amazing people out there to be grateful for, and a loving God. And that, other than that, good luck. That's what life is about.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.